I wanted to answer on the Pasuk Yitzayim. I'll try my best not to mix you up. There's a... We're in the middle of your time. It says, "V'tis ha'chein v'chesed l'fanav." Chein comes before chesed. So whatever chein and chesed are, in this pasuk chein is before chesed. And yesterday we spent some time defining them according to Vilna Gaon. Today I'm going to discuss the Megillah Sturim's comments. Chein is before chesed. When she was taken, when she was first taken to the king, it says, "Vatita v'anara be'inav," way back in Perek Bey's Pasuk Tes, "Vatisa chesed l'fanav." So it said that, chesed, she had, the way we defined it then was she cast an aura of loving kindness. There was an air of chesed. She's a chesed lefanav.
Well, she was the cause of the world, and everyone wanted to give, so she was the ultimate chesed.
Excellent. That was good. Chesed. So it was like you were around her, you felt the chesed in her. That's at its most basic level. And there's no mention of chein.
Hard to read.
Later on in Pasuk Tezvav, it says, "Vatihi Esther Nisus Chain, Beinikal Re'ah." Then it mentions Chain. So what, when she was in the process, when she was still in the Beis HaNashim, or when she was first taken, one Pasuk mentions Chesed. And then it mentions Chain many Pasukim later. So it's split. First of all, it's split up. In Pasuk Tes, it says Chesed, doesn't say anything about Chein. In Pasuk Tes Vav, it says Chein, doesn't say anything about Chesed. So it's split up. The second thing which you should take note of is in these two Pasukim, Chesed comes first and then Chein. Chesed comes before Chein.
Where?
In Pasuk Tes is Chesed, Pasuk Tes Vav is Chein.
Oh.
Chesed comes now in this Pasuk, when she was crowned, the Pasuk says, "Vatisa Chein v'chesed l'fanav." It puts Chein and Chesed together, and Chein comes before Chesed. There has to be there's a method to this. There has to be a rhyme and reason. The Megillah Sturim addresses this. And he says, you really have to see the context of the Pesukim. He starts with Pasuk Tes. Pasuk Tes, when she was discovered after 3 years of hiding, she was dragged away forcibly from her home. And the Pasuk says, "Vatita v'anara be'inav," she was good in his eyes, "Vatita chesed l'fanav," and there was a spirit of chesed around her. At the time, what she was in greatest need of was salvation, protection and salvation. She was in danger. She was in danger for resisting. This is something which a number of Mefarshim deal with. She put herself in Sakana. It wasn't a safe practice to be involved in, to resist and not to heed the direct command of the king. She needed chesed. She was in dire need of chesed. She needed HaKadosh Baruch Hu's chesed. Even if she doesn't deserve it, Hashem should be kind to her. Hashem should grant from his chesed that she shouldn't suffer because of her resistance, because she didn't want to be the wife of a Gentile king. So she needed chesed. So Hashem granted her chesed. Now how that worked out on the ground, you could use your imagination. It could be Hashem granted her chesed that even though they knew about it, they didn't tell anybody. Or maybe Hashem caused them to forget about it. How it worked out in actuality, that she didn't get in trouble for that, it's really not important. But the source of it was a chesed. Hashem blessed her with chesed, and she benefited from chesed. Hashem, she was enveloped by this aura of chesed because HaKadosh Baruch Hu was granting her chesed. Hashem caused people to react that way to her so that she wouldn't get in trouble. You don't get someone in trouble if you see them as the source of chesed. They're kind and benevolent, and you just look at them, and they look such a, you know, a balas chesed. So that saved her, and she needed it. Hashem wanted her to be the queen. She didn't want to be the queen, but Hashem wanted her to be the queen. That brings us to Chen. Chen is commonly translated as grace. Chen. You could find, you know, generally you find chen together with eyes. She found chen be'enav. So that's not just that's not beauty. That, you know, that's the beauty of the set of the phrase beauty is in the eyes of the beholder. That's chen. There's natural beauty, and then there's beauty in the eyes of the beholder. So chen is always used in conjunction with eyes, because chen is always based on a person's perspective. A beautiful woman is beautiful by all rights. Everyone thinks she's beautiful. A woman who has chen says she only has chen by those who perceive her. They perceive her with chen. It's something outside the natural beauty. She needed chen. There were so many beautiful women. They're all beautiful, one more beautiful than the next. Hashem wanted her to be the queen. Hashem wanted everyone to be talking about her, and to tell, Hashem wanted it to reach the king's ears. This is the one. Don't even bother with the other ones. Beauty is not sufficient. She needs chen. Chen is like something special. They look at her. This is something very special. This is something unique. She finds grace. So that explains why it's in two different places, because the chen and chesed were for two different purposes. The chesed was to save her life, and the chen was to get her married off. And that also explains the order, because first you save her life and then you marry her off, not the other way around. The other way around is not. You don't marry her off and then try and save her life, but then it's too late. But that's what he says there. But over here, Miguel Stern tells us a very interesting point. He said, "B'darach sheba'olam." You know, the way he defines chen and chesed is somewhat unique. He has his own particular way of explaining it. Should chen is the first impression, like we said. That echoes what we said. That chen, you know, it's what meets the eye. We said something like this, but now I'm going to say a little bit different. Chen is the first impression. She finds favor in your eyes. Do you love her? I see potential. Chen is that I see something. I see potential. I see something special. I see something out of the ordinary. There's something that finds favor in my eyes. Do I love her? Are we one? No. But it's enough to start. Ava, love. Love is the second step in the process. And B'derach Klal, B'nayg Sheba'olam. Now, there's two kinds of chen. There's two types of chen. There's a chen on a higher level that we've been talking about. And then there's a pashta chen. A pashta chen, which is a chen of taiva. It's very similar in certain aspects to the chen of something beautiful, something special, something precious. It's a chen of taiva. You see the potential. This is something which I can get my taiva from. You see the potential. This is something special. This is something out of the ordinary. There's something unique about this. And this is something which is going to fulfill my taivas. And this is the kind that we grapple with on an everyday basis. You know, we see things, they meet their eye, we're gripped by it, we have no relationship with it, there's no bonding, there's no love, there's no, you know, but we're still gripped by it, and we see it, and it drags us and attracts us in the wrong direction, though, an improper direction. But it does grip us. So we'll call chen a gripper, okay? Chen grips. It can attract you towards the special aesthetic properties of something, like the chen of a fine work of art. That's also chen. Even if you don't own it, even if you're never going to see it again, you know, it has chen. You're not going to possess it. But you're attracted to it. And then there's the chen of taiva, which brings a person to nothing. You know, chen of taiva brings a person to nothing. And then there's ava. Well, we're gonna do chesed soon. B'nayik shabu olam. Someone has chen for taiva. And that we're talking about in their world, in the world of the Parsiim, the Persian world. The Gemara says the Persians were Bali taiva. B'nayik shabu olam. The first encounter is chen of taiva. And then comes the relationship. But precedes the relationship is a chain of taiva. I mean, this is something which we don't have to go into. I think it's self-understood. So the relationships are born from the midst of passion. To put it in other words, the first the taiva and the passion, and this is each in their Persian society we're talking about, and which uniquely reflects our own society. Persian society that was the value system, that first came the passion, and that they saw the potential to fulfill each other's passions, and then came the relationship. Sometimes a relationship could lead to ava, you know, could be. Sometimes it leads to sinner, but sometimes it can go on from there. In this pasuk, you see, the chen comes before chesed. You think the chesed, you know, chesed normally should, might, you know, chesed, if chesed and chen are referring to two separate midas, then the chesed in the order of things should be before chen. Chesed is a general aura, a general spirit of kindness, and chen is a potential to go further to cement the relationship. That's what you would say. Yeah, if you take it in the let's go gradually. First is an encounter that the person's a nice person. I'll just bring it down to our level. The person's a nice person, they have common interests, they're kind, they're caring, they're sensitive, it's a decent human being. Then comes the potential for becoming one. That potential for becoming one follows, comes after chesed. That can be split into two categories. A potential for becoming one in the proper way, that you're attracted to the Yir Shamayim and the Midas Tavis and the ability to produce a beautiful home, or it could be the improper way to fulfill the taiva. Then comes the relationship.
Then why does chesed come first?
Because chesed is not necessarily related to bonding, relationship. You do chesed to people without, you know, you do chesed, that's pre-relationship.
We're talking about a man and a woman, right? A man and a woman first comes the first part of chesed, then comes the chesed. Isn't that normally true?
Why would chesed come of chesed? Chesed is that there's that you see the...
you see in her qualities.
Qualities. Those qualities are giving, that she's a giving person. Chesed is that you're seeing the draw to become one. So chesed comes first. Chesed Chichen is something which describes a relationship between two people.
Chichen is what leads to
it. Right, that means it has in it the thing that draws the two, you know. Chesed is...
What do you
is
care about chesed if there's no relationship?
That's why it's first. It's the initial thing is... I don't want to talk in the language of the streets, you know, but that's the way people, in the streets, that's the way they meet, that before there's any thoughts of a strong relationship, there's just, I don't know how, I'd like to give a mashal, it's not the best mashal in the world, but I think it's going to serve the purpose. You know, you have a guy that, he has a friend that's a girl. And you tell him it's not a healthy thing. He says, "Don't worry, Rabbi. She's just a friend. She could just be a guy." I mean, Rav Moshe Feinstein says such a thing doesn't exist.
Yeah.
So I think we could rely on Rav Moshe for that. I want to stick to the Torah here. I'm not interested in getting into the subject.
So that's exactly the point. Since there is no, there has to be.
No, that means they started. No, no, that's not chayin. Chayin is the next step. What happens when a boy and a girl, chas v'shalom, decide to be friends? It's platonic relationship. They just want to be friends, just like a guy. What happens?
I don't know.
Would a guy do that with a girl that's not nice? Or would a girl do it with a guy that's not nice? That relationship is described as chesed.
I don't know any guys and girls that are just friends.
Baruch Hashem.
I do.
It doesn't.
But let's say it starts out that way.
Pretend, but it's not.
No, it does start out like that. It could last for a day or two. It does. It traps a guy. I mean, a guy would never enter into such a thing if he knows in the end he's going to have to end up marrying this person. It gets trapped. So that's chesed. Chesed is that, you know, there's no responsibility to one another. There's no bonding with each other. I have a lot of friends. You're also a friend. He's also a friend, you know. Why? Because we're nice to each other. But there's nothing that, you know, he's not chayiv to her. She's not chayiv to him. Chayin is after that. Chayin is that we see the potential of being just you and me and nobody else in the circle. Okay, chesed is, I can be a chesed to many people.
So
here in this pasuk, you see, the chayin comes before chesed, and that's strange.
But that's, in Sim Sholem, chayin comes before chesed. Chayin, chesed, rachim, lelein, v'alkal yisrael.
Over there, there's also an explanation.
That's why, let's say on Shech, the person needs a... If there's no chayin, then there's no... You never even get to the chesed.
Okay. Mitzvah Shem, when we talk about Shech updates, we'll explain that too. Right now, we're trying to explain why the word chayin is before chesed. He said the reason is pashut.
I understood.
Esther was in danger. There's going to be chayin between her and Achashverosh. Now it's going to come together. There's going to be chayin between her and Achashverosh. It's going to happen. If it's the chayin of Tashmish... then she's going to be a defiled woman. She doesn't want to have Tashmish with Achashverosh. She doesn't want to have relations with him. She doesn't. Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't necessarily want either. I mean, that depends on different opinions, whether she did have Tashmish, she didn't have Tashmish. We had one opinion that was a shade. The Gemara says a shade. She never had Tashmish because a shade had Tashmish with him. The Megillah Tam has a different mahalach than that. She didn't want to have it. She did not want to have it. It's bad for her. It's tummy. It's painful. There's no pleasure from it. It's the biggest tumor that a Jewish girl could be exposed to. She didn't want to have it. And there's going to be chayin. But there's another type of chayin. It's also an attraction. But it's an attraction to... She's high. She's royal. She's on a pedestal. He wants to be with her and keep her on the pedestal. The attraction is not a physical... selfish taiva attraction, which he's attracted to her. He's attracted to what she is, not to what he can get from her, which is ideal in a marriage, kiyadua. The Megillah Tam says that Kadosh Baruch Hu also didn't want her to have Tashmish, and he helped her. He says that the words Chayin v'chesed here are not two separate midas. This is a chiddush here. So when chayin and chesed are mentioned separately, they're two separate midas. One is chayin, one is chesed. When it says chayin v'chesed are together, it's one midah. It's called chesed shebechayin. You know, that's what we do with combined midas. Chesed shebechayin. That she should find chayin, And Hashem does want it. He wants her to get picked. And he wants Achashverosh to love her more than all the women. And he wants Achashverosh to fulfill her every wish. Because that's what's necessary to save Klal Yisrael. But the Megillas Taharim calls it, Hashem wants the chain of chesed, not the chain of time.
The chain of
chesed. The Achashverosh should have the chain of chesed.
He should be attracted to chesed.
To her chesed, right. The chesed, first, you know, the she has chesed, exposed to the chesed, and the chesed should lead to a chain of chesed. He's attracted to the chesed. He wants to have a unique relationship with her, just her and him, but only because he wants to constantly have her chesed around. He wants her chesed all for himself. A one-on-one relationship with her chesed.
That's kind of weird.
I told you, in an ideal Jewish marriage, that is the glue that holds it together.
Talking
about Achashverosh. It was one of the biggest nisim of Megillas Esther. Okay? Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Yes, for Achashverosh this was the big. He was a Baal Taiv Shen Kamayu. And he loved Esther because of her chesed. So now we explained why it said chesed before, to save her life. Chain, that she should get married to Achashverosh. And now we reverse it to chain and chesed, because now we're at the stage of chain, but we want the chain to be a chain of chesed. And the Megillas Taharim says, because of that, Achashverosh did not have relations with her. And this is a very unique shot. You know, we had one shot that it was a shade. Hey, that's a miracle. We had another shot that Bigson and Sarish were going to kill Achashverosh and Esther because of the sleep that they were losing.
Well, that could be the same.
That could be with the shade, right. That could be with the shade. It could be without the shade. And now you have the Megillas Taharim is that he didn't have tashmish with her because... Yes. When we get to it, we'll just, you know, we didn't get to it yet. One thing at a time. One thing at a time. And now we're at the point that Megillas Taharim says that Achashverosh was so attracted to her chesed, to her refined character, to her nature, to her benevolence, to her kindness, that he can't think of her in such terms. He doesn't have relations with her. It's an ace. Don't make the mistake of thinking it's not an ace. It's a nace. Let's not fool ourselves. It is the biggest nace. I'm crazy nace. And that's how he learned shot in the pasuk. From the just different switching words. Isn't that amazing? I mean, he says a lot more, but this is as much as we're going to go into right now. Let's go on to the next pasuk.
In Shmuel Esrei, chein of chesed, chein of chesed, is chein of chesed also there?
Probably, yeah, you could do it. I mean, the Megillas Taharim doesn't talk about it. You could learn shot on your own. The chein of chesed, that we should be beloved to God because of chesed. And our chesed should be, you know, we should do chesed. And God should do chesed with us. We have a relationship based on chesed. The truth is, that's the only relationship we could have with God, is that he gives us chesed. Our relationship with God is because we receive his chesed. That's the only relationship we could have. So that's true over there, too.
What is the relationship that we have with him?
We can't give him anything.
So what's
he doesn't need anything.
He doesn't need it, but you can give.
When we give, we're really giving ourselves.
You give a present to a rich guy, he doesn't need it.
Just no, the Gemara says that when a rich guy accepts a present for you, he's giving you a present. The honor is all yours.
Yeah, like when a Rebbe
is. You know, he's doing you. Rich people don't take presents from people. They don't. If they accept a gift from you, I just heard this Murray Dickamaisa. There's an institution. I won't name the institution. There's an institution. They're big fundraisers. They are mega fundraisers, and they had like an art sale. They had an Oriental artist make original works of the Rebbeim in the institution. Gorgeous. I mean, these things are masterpieces, and they paid the Orientals nothing. You know. The Oriental in China, they commissioned to an agent to a Chinese artist. This thing was, it was unbelievable, and then they had a banquet, and at the banquet they had these works for sale, and it's a fundraiser thing. And one of the honorees was admiring it, but it was a lot of money, and he admired it, and he used the money for better things. There was somebody smart in this organization. They gave it to him as a gift. Because he admired it. And the donation that he gave the institution was far greater than this thing would have brought in. When you give a rich person a gift, you're not giving him anything, you're taking from him. You know the story?
How do you know the story?
You know the story because it was your father.
Yeah, I know the story.
I know everything. Okay. I know everything. You better be careful. I know that. I can know everything. Okay, very good. So now you know which institution it was. Weiter. It's a true story, right?
Yeah,
it just happened. When you give something to a rich person, you're not giving him anything. You're taking.
All in the Torah. Everything is in the Torah.
You're taking.
You're the rich person. You're a rich guy in the story?
No.
Oh.
No, he was the
admirer. And I don't want to be a rich guy in the story. I'm happy the way I am. I mean, I'm rich, but not like that rich guy is rich. I want to be rich like I'm rich. Pasuk Yud Zayin. We did. Oh, Pasuk Yud Ches. Thank you. Vayasa Melech Mishta Gadol. He made a big party. Gadol, a great party. That big, great. L'chol Sarav. For all of his officers, Vavadav, and his personal servants. Es Mishta Esther, the Mesiba. We'll call it a Mesiba. The feast of Esther was a drinking party. Va'anachal HaMedinas Asay, he removed the, he exempted the provinces from taxes. No more taxes. Tax free, it's like the Cayman Islands. No more taxes. That's it, tax free. Va'yitan Masas Kin HaMelech, and he gave presents like the hand of the king.
He didn't learn his lesson from the last mystery.
Oshakein, Oshalom. He had an agenda.
He had an agenda.
He had an agenda. Ace Mishta Esther. It's Esther's Mishta. He's making Esther's Mishta. Esther's Mishta. First of all, the Mepharshim may ask, why do you call it Mishta Gadol? The first Mishta was 187 days. The first Mishta was everybody from all 127 provinces. This was a small party, relatively. It was for his officers and his servants. I mean, the guest list was short. It doesn't say how long it lasted, but you could assume if it lasted a long time, then the Pasuk would have mentioned it. The Vilna Gaon asks this. And the Vilna Gaon says that the purpose of the first party was to impress with the largesse, the kamus, you know, the quantity, to so much, and there's everything there, and it's for so long. And the numbers, we discussed the numbers, that represent shleimus, because 180 represents shleimus, and 7 represents shleimus. But here, he wanted to make an elite, a party for the elite. No, he's not inviting everyone. I mean, it's impressive to make a party to invite everyone. That's one. But it's also impressive not to invite everyone. You want to make something special, so you exclude some people. You know, I don't know if you remember, last year, I'll leave that out. But you want to make, sorry, I almost slipped. You want to make something so you exclude. Forget it.
No, that sounds
great.
Wait,
now we want to know.
Yeah, no.
So now, wait, this is it. So now it sounds like it's special because we weren't told and we were excluded from it.
Yeah, you are not. I can't tell you. You're not privy to this information. Only special people. Everything we say is recorded.
Mind games. Rabbi's playing mind games with us.
Man, and Mr. Gadol, it was more prestigious. It was for the elite. Why did he do this? Why? Why did he make such a chashava mesiba?
People would want to know why they weren't invited.
The Gemara Megillah provides us the answer for that. He wanted to know where Esther was from, and she wouldn't tell him. He wanted to know, he was dying to know where she was from, and she wouldn't tell him. So he resorted to flattery. He made the most unique, private...
What was stopping him from doing
the
same thing
he did to Vashti,
like making her come
nace. Down? Nace. But there was a
mahalat
to the nace. That's also a nace. They didn't kill her.
No, just they didn't make her come down naked.
Oh, was that?
Yeah.
It was just a weird thing.
Well, first of all, he might not even want that.
Why did he do it in the first place? And, you know, even a kal shav kalim doesn't do such a thing, the Gemara says. Why did he do it in the first place? He's going to do it again?
Nobody's that stupid.
Well, yeah. In any case, Hashem wouldn't let him do it. And that Hashem's not going to let him do that. Hashem is running the show here. Achashverosh is not in charge. He's not behind the driving wheel. He's not driving the bus.
It's a magic bus.
Well, whatever it is, he's not driving it.
Everyone always
Stan drives the bus.
What?
He's not driving
the teacher
the,
drives the bus.
So the Gemara says,
the magic school.
It's based on Rashi and the Gemara Megillah, Daf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph. Do you want it to impress Esther? You want it to flatter her? You want it to heap honor upon her so that she would show appreciation or maybe put her into the mood, the chais, and tell her where he's from.
This wasn't a separate party for the men and women. It was just one.
This was something just... this had dignity to it. It seems this party had dignity. It wasn't a drinking fest. He's not going to get what he wants if he does that. That's a party when he wants to have his time. It's now he wants to know where she's from. It seems it was like the royalty was there. It wasn't, there were no common folk. It was a dignified party. The Yisuf Lakach, the commentator of the Yisuf Lakach goes through a timeline. He says, this pasuk is interesting. It has a couple things in it. It talks about the Mishta Gadol and the exemption from the taxes. And the two things are totally unrelated. What does the Mishnah have to do with the exemption? So Pashim Shad is, and this Chazal say, that was just another tool in his arsenal. He told Esther, he said, if you tell me where you're from, I could exempt them from taxes. She wouldn't tell, so he exempted them all from taxes. And that's Pashim Shad. That's the Pashim Shad.
Is it?
He's making a party, so she'll say where she's from. He's offering an exemption, so she'll say where she's from.
He's offering her an exemption for what?
No, that any of her people won't have to pay taxes forever. As long as she's clean. Yeah, if she's a Nigerian, then the country of Nigeria will not have to pay tribute to the king.
He's rule of the world?
Yes, the known world.
Wait, so what does it mean?
180 degrees. We said that he ruled 180 degrees of the hemisphere. The world is 360 degrees.
Right.
So he ruled 180. It was the upper world.
He didn't rule America.
What?
So if he exempts everyone from taxes, wouldn't he lose all his money? Like,
yes.
Well, if he exempts everyone from taxes, so then he's going to lose the money for the time being, yes. It wasn't a permanent state. Okay. The Yeshiv Lakha goes through a timeline. Achashverosh was a melech for 3 years when Vashti was killed. Esther hid out for 3 years, so we talk about the sixth year. It took a year for the whole process to be completed when she became his wife, the seventh year. So after 7 years, she was the queen. 5 years later is when the decree came out over the Bnei Yisrael. The whole thing with Haman, the events in the Megillah might be a few psukim apart, but there's many years that separate it. Year 12 is when the decree came out that all the Jews are to be executed. Year 13 is when they were saving. When they were saved. Purim was Pesach of the year, Pesach of that year, they were saved. I'm sorry, Purim of that year, they were saved. And then, and you look at the end of the Megillah, one of the last psukim in the Megillah. And remember that there's nothing in the Megillah that's not part of the Yeshua. There's no irrelevant information. The purpose of Megillah's Esther is not to ascribe greatness to the monarchy of Persia. But the last pasuk, it's one of the last pesukim in Perek Yud, is Vayasam HaMelech Achashverosh Ma'asa La'oretz V'Yayam. Achashverosh put a tax. Why is that relevant? The Jews were saved, Mordechai is high, Esther is high, everything's in place, the second base of Mordechai is going to be built, and Achashverosh taxed. Put a tax. What's the relevance? What is the relevance to us as Jewish people, as Divrei Torah, that he taxed the people? That's irrelevant. That's a Persian thing.
Once he found out where she was from,
you're going to have to develop that more. That's not complete what you're saying.
I know it's not complete.
Yeah, I'm saying it's not completely saying the Yosef Lakach says. He said, "There's your sight and miracles. There's more than one perspective one could have on a miracle. Hashem makes a miracle, and then Hashem wants to change it. He changes it back. He turns the water to blood. Now it's blood. Now Hashem wants it back to water. He turns it back to water. The Yosef Lakach says that that's not the way it works. Hashem has a chayk. he sets statutes, dictates, and derech hateva. And that's the way it has to be. And that never goes away. That never goes away, ever. Hashem doesn't repeal his laws. He made a law, an apple falls out of a tree, it falls down. That law is never taken back. That's Ratzon Hashem. And Hashem makes a miracle. And he makes the apple fly up. He's not canceling out the law, he's overpowering the law. That means there's a force that's pushing the apple down. And that force is it's exerting, Hashem created that force, and it's exerting its force on the apple to go down. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu is doing a nace, and the power of nace is stronger than the force of Teva, and it pushes it up. There's a commentary by one of the Talmidim of the Talmidim of the Vilna Gaon called Reb Yitzchak Malatzan. I think it's from the base madrash of the Vilna Gaon. He has a commentary on the Siddur. In Rosh Hashanah davening, we say, "Oyz biyadcha ugvura biminecha." There's strength in your hand, but there's overpowering strength in your right hand. And what does that mean? Again, strength in your hand and overpowering strength in your right hand. He said, because strength in your hand refers to the laws of nature. That's very strong. There's a power. When a Kadosh Baruch Hu does a nace, so then he has to overpower that power. He doesn't take it back. He doesn't cancel out. He doesn't turn it off. To overpower a power that takes gvura. So ois biyadcha, strength. Gvura biyimnecha is nisim.
Who says this?
Reb Yitzchak Malatzan. Mem Aleph Lamed Aleph Tzadik Nun. Reb Yitzchak Malatzan. The mechaber of the Siach Yitzchak. Ois biyadcha gvura biyimnecha. Now, what's the nafkamina of this guy here? So, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants the apple to come down again. He doesn't have to make the apple come down again. As soon as there's no more need for the nace, it automatically, the nace is only there as long as it's necessary. It goes back. It says by Kriyas Yamsuf. There were two nisim, right? That are split, and the Jews were saved, and then it fell down, and the Mitzrayim were drowned. The Yosef Lekach says that the second part, the yam falling down, was not a nace. The need, the nace was needed so the Jews should get across. The last Jew that left the dry sea, the seabed, as soon as his foot went off, there was no more need. There's no more need. So the forces of nature are constantly they killed the Mitzrayim. I know this is there is a machlokes in the Mefarshim whether there was it was a nace,
And the pasuk, stick in
his staff, pasuk shot in the pasuk is mashma was. The Yosef Lekach doesn't learn that way.
So and,
which means that the Jews were saved with derech nice and the Mitzrayim were killed with derech hateva. That's enough nafkamina. I mean, I don't know how to answer your question. I know that there's a machlokes pasuk,
Maybe Moshe Rabbeinu stuck in his staff as soon as the last person left the dry.
Yeah. Well, Hashem told him to do it.
The whole shira is on.
I mean,
the
I have
ground.
A shot, but it's going to take longer than we have right now. I'm sorry. What?
Why is the whole shira on the drowning though? The shira mentions.
It's also nice. So you can't have a shira on the neis b'derech hateva. What's bothering you?
If that's not what's the case, then the whole thing is Hashem Yimlech, where we see Hashem.
It's both there, yeah. It's everything.
And anyway, the killing of the Mitzrayim with the Derech HaTeva was brought about by Anais anyway. I mean,
if the
Red Sea hadn't split open, then they wouldn't have gone into it in the first place.
So he says, man, like this. Here's his sequence according to him. Which I call. He says that he gave a discount, gave an exemption to all the Sari Hamedinas. He had the Sari Hamedinas, the leaders of the different Medinas in front of him. And he exempted them. The Jews weren't included in this exemption. You know why? Because they don't have a Sar. The Jews don't have a royal personage. Mordechai eventually became it, but that's later. They don't have a Sar. And he didn't think he was Jewish. So he said, "I'm going to exempt all the Sarim and their nations from taxes." So that means the entire country, the entire world, the entire kingdom of Achashverus, they're all exempt from paying taxes. Who's the only nation that's paying taxes?
The Jews.
The Jews. It happens, We get this a lot. The Jews are financing the entire kingdom. Could you imagine that? call that, that's like a darkatava. Because they didn't have anyone there at the Mishnah. That's step one. Well, Haman wanted to buy the Jews. He wanted to kill the Jews. Right? Haman and Mordechai had cross purposes. Haman wanted to kill the Jews. Mordechai wanted to kill the Goyim. Yeah, the ones that come up to against the Jews. There was a war. They killed thousands of Goyim. Mordechai orchestrated that. Amalek. To kill Amalek. Anybody that raised their hands against a Jew was a duck. A dead duck. Right, so Haman wanted to kill the Jews, and Mordechai wanted to kill the Goyim. Haman wanted to kill the Jews, there was a money transaction. Well, Achashverosh took it, or he didn't take it, but there was a money transaction. Aseres halachim kikar kesef. 10,000 silver talents. Mordechai wants to kill the Goyim, there's no money transaction. He wrote out the same letters. Haman sent out letters with the permission of the king. All the people should rise up and kill the Jews. Mordechai sent out letters with the permission of the king. All the Jews should rise up and kill the Goyim. And Haman, it cost money, and Mordechai didn't. Megillas Tosfos says, you know why? Because if the Jews were the only ones that they were financing the kingdom, you can't kill out the Jews. You're taking out the kingdom. It's the revenue. That's it. You can't kill them. So Haman triggers. It's going to cost me money. So he had to take away any opposition of Achashverosh by offering the money. In the end, Achashverosh didn't take the money, but he had to offer it. But Mordechai wanted to kill out the Goyim. Achashverosh doesn't care financially if the Goyim die. Does it matter? Does it matter? Yeah, all the Jews in the world, we said there wasn't a single Jew outside of the kingdom, so it's a lot. Every single Jew was concentrated in Achashverosh's kingdom. There was no one in a neighboring kingdom. He had all the Jews. Or he made them pay a lot of money.
What?
Or he made them pay a lot of money. He said, you have to pay 10 times the amount. You know, the Russia, they supply natural oil and gas to neighboring countries, and I think the price was like 46 dollars per cubic liter or something like that.
That's insane.
Now they want to renegotiate the contract for 200. That's more than a 400% increase. You can charge whatever you want. You know what? So don't, you know. So they were paying, you know, $5 a head. Now you got to pay $500 a head. I don't think it's a problem. This is a monarchy. It's not a democracy. You don't have to be fair. And we've lived this our whole history. Jews always had to pay everything, and not only that, we weren't allowed to work. You couldn't own land, but you had to pay more taxes. There's ample precedent to this. That doesn't bother me. He said, but Mordechai, you know, if Mordechai wants to kill the Goyim and it's gonna cause a financial loss to Achashverosh, it's not going to be so easy for Mordechai to pass it through.
How many Goyim are we talking about? I'm saying you kill like the whole place and there'll only be Jews left.
Doesn't matter. You're a king. You have to think of finances. You're going to lose revenue. You're going to lose income. And somebody wants to kill them out. It's not so easy. Right. It's doable. I mean, the whole thing was an ace. So it's doable, but it wasn't so easy. But that was the godless. Because Achashverosh didn't know where Esther was from, so he gave an exemption to everyone. The only ones to benefit from the exemption were the ones that were there with their sarim. The Jews didn't have a sar. So everybody else was exempt from taxes and the Jews were not. So Haman wanted to kill the Jews, he had to pay for that. But Mordechai wanted to kill the Goyim. There was no longer any opposition because Achashverosh says, okay, kill the cheapskates. They're not paying me any money anyway. So he was right on the same page as Mordechai. That's an ace. Okay? But as soon as the Mechama was over, so there's no longer the need for the nace. So automatically the taxes come back. That's what the pasuk tells us. The taxes were returned. Which taxes is that pasuk talking about? It's talking about the whole reason why God exempted the Goyim from taxes was for the purpose of the sake of the Jews. Hashem didn't make that happen because Hashem wanted to save the Goyim money. Hashem made that miraculous occurrence happen so it would be easier to kill them. Now that they're dead, dead Goyim don't pay taxes. So automatically, the taxes come back. And that's why the pasuk is there. It ends with it to show you the final stroke of Hashgacha Pratis. Okay, everybody, we'll stop over here.